Start of interview with A.P. Jayasurya on the 15th of January 1968. This is the first section of this interview. The very last section is on cassette 263.
One of the areas I'm interested in is the civil service, the Ceylon civil service, and the public service in general. And I know as minister you would have come into fairly close contact with the public service. How would you assess the nature and nature of the civil service as you found it, say, in 1956?
Civil service. In 1956, civil service is really the framework on which the whole administration was set up. Civil service was very necessary at that time, you see, and everything from the central government, everything flowed through the civil service, you see, to the average man, you see. And it was considered at that time that you can't do without civil service, you see. It acquired such an important position.
From your point of view, were there any shortcomings in the public service as a whole?
At that time?
Yes.
Well, there were this. It was a sort of an exclusive bureaucratic institution, you see, because the civil service was considered to be a sort of an infallible body. They can't make mistakes, and they knew everything in the world, there's nothing at all that they did not know. So civil servant was the cure for all ills in the country. That sort of idea prevailed. I think that was an entirely wrong idea. You see, civil servants was just as human as anybody else, and they certainly had acquired certain information by experience, by working in various government departments, and various public utility departments. They acquired a lot of information.
Because of this attitude, did you find them trying to impose their views on the ministers?
That's right. Mm-hmm. It was there.
Mm-hmm. Say even earlier, in the 1950s, when you were a member of parliament for foreigners in that area, in the local arena, did you feel that the GA or the AGA tended to look down on the local MP or on you and try to...
Generally they did, you see. But there were some civil servants who cooperated with the MP, who tried to cooperate, you see, and try to help him in getting certain things done for the people of that particular area and all the rest of it. But there were some who actually thought that the MP doesn't count, sort of thing, you see. MP doesn't count. And in fact, so much so that during Mr. Bandaranaike's time, he gave the MP the first place in that area, and the government agent was in the second place. Mm-hmm. He always did that.
Yes, I know that happened. But taking the earlier UNP era, can you remember any specific occasions when you felt that the AGA was sort of brushing you aside, not giving you your opinion enough attention, and acting like an overlord?
Well, in certain questions it might be that now, for instance, when a minister visits the place, the AGA had to, you should take a second place. It's a member of the parliament who, you see, who actually did everything, you see. AGA was, the GA was simply to carry out certain things that the minister ordered, you see.
Now, I was wondering whether you can recall any incident where you felt that the AGA was opposed to what you said and didn't take your views into consideration. This is before 56.
Before 56. You know, before 56, you see, during the state council days, and even parliament days before I became a minister, in the country, we used to have what is known as coordinating committees. In these coordinating committees, usually the member was merely to place facts. He people place facts that the GA hardly that be the person who
take the decision.
Yes, to make the decision.
That's in practice, but in theory, wasn't the coordinating committee supposed to take the decision? The whole committee.
Pardon?
In theory,
yes.
I thought that the coordinating committee,
yes,
took the decision as a whole.
Well, usually the coordinating committee take the decision as a whole, but the GA, being the chairman of the committee, he naturally has got certain ways of having his own view accepted by the committee. But at the same time, I must say this, if the MP does not throw his weight about too much, then he can get the government, some of the government, not all, some of the government to unite on his side and get him to do certain things, quite a lot of things he could do. Now, in my experience, I found that paid it off. If the representative of the people does not throw his weight about too much, and his own intention is to get things done for the people, he can do it.
GA
doesn't obstruct that.
In fact, is it correct to say that in 1965, one or two, or even maybe more,
yes,
SLFP MPs,
yes,
of the 60-65 period,
yes,
lost their seats because they had been a bit arrogant or been throwing their weight about in the district and had become unpopular?
No doubt some of them made themselves unpopular. I think, now this is between yourself and myself, some of the MPs for the term, practically every election there are two sides. Some of the MPs were very angry when somebody opposed them. After he got elected, he tried to take revenge on the people who opposed him in various ways. As an MP, they pointed the commonest way that they used to do things was to acquire one of that man's land for a school, for a hospital or something like that. Because when I was minister, I found that, you see, that somebody wanted to acquire 5 acres of land from a very well-developed estate in a constituency in the south, supposed to be for a hospital. But there was government land available in that area. So I said, isn't the government land available? And it's a proper for a state of a well-developed land, because this man worked against him in the previous election. Okay? So he made a charge against me to say that I had accepted bribe from that side. That is why I am taking up that effort.
You see, I asked this question because I was given the instance of the seat which Mrs. Vimala Kanangara won.
Who?
Mrs. Kanangara of the UNP.
And this, Mrs. Kanangara?
Yes, that's right.
Of this Galigamur?
That's right. Someone said that's a typical SLFP area.
Yeah.
But the MP for that area had alienated lots of people there by his behavior as MP. So I was wondering whether that is correct.
I'm not quite certain about that, you see, because the MP was not that sort of man who threw his weight about. He was not a schoolmaster, you see. He was a head teacher of a school, you see. He was not the type of man. He was a man who had been used to dealing with members of the general public for a number of years as a school teacher, head of the school. Yes, he came across so many people of various sorts and various kinds of people, and so that he understood the people. I don't know really. I cannot say it to a particular constituency because I don't know very much. I attended several meetings where general election came, otherwise I don't know anything. But it's just possible. It is an SNP area, no doubt. But similarly, there are typical SNP areas in other areas, which we lost.
Like
for instance, Katwan. Katwan was an SNP area. We lost because of the Tamil vote.
Is the Tamil vote very much in that area?
But they tipped the balance, you see. If you vote there, the man got it. As soon as Kandaman said that, he had given the order, all the Tamil people, Kandaman in federal party, Tamil people should vote for the UNP, then of course that tipped the balance in favor of the candidates. So much so that about 18 seats in 1965 election, about on that alone, 18 seats went to the UNP.
Mm-hmm. Regarding the MP's position as MP,
yes. You
will find that various people come and ask you to do this and that,
yes.
And to interfere in this and that, and to take this up with the government.
Yes.
What do you consider the MP's role to be?
MP's position, you mean?
Yes, what should he do as MP when he finds various people?
Well, it lot depends upon the first impression that MP creates. If the MP creates an impression that the personal matters are matters that that MPs cannot attend, but if it's a matters of common interest, matters of common interest alone, then nobody will take any offence. But if he starts doing a few personal matters to various people, then of course all the others also expect those personal favours from him. But generally I have found out it is very difficult for an MP stand up on his strictly constitutional position and say, please don't come to me for personal things, I'm only for the matters of common interest. He can't take up that position. He has got to invariably some kind or other of a personal nature. He has got to come out.
Otherwise, he's likely to lose the election.
That is a position in this country. That is so in this country. Our people always expect personal matters from the MP.
Mm-hmm.
And if he doesn't do it, then he gets angry.
But do you feel that the MP shouldn't really interfere in these personal matters?
He does. He can interfere.
Mm.
He can interfere, but the trouble is, if he starts interfering, the number of matters, even if he interferes, he can't do anything. Then those people get angry with him.
No, if you take an ideal situation,
yes.
Do you feel that the MP should only confine himself to matters of common welfare?
That's what I think. Now that the party system is coming in, you see, that once the party system is firmly established, I think he will be able to take up that position. Not immediately. But there is also this to be considered. When the member of the adjoining constituency goes in for personal matters, member of this constituency cannot take up that position, you see. Why is that MP doing that? Why can't you do this? So all the people go to that thing. And that MP. And if that MP happened to be a member of the opposition, then he required to accept this constituency also.
And not only that, you have to watch the defeated candidate also. I was wondering whether this, you know, getting involved in providing all these services,
yes,
doesn't cut both ways, in the sense that, right, you might help this group, but while you're helping them, some others get angry because you're helping them.
Oh yes. But of course, there is this also. If an MP, you see, he does even 100 important matters, setting up schools, setting up hospitals, setting up various matters of common interest, the people, you see. But if he has left one out, when the general election comes, the people, your opponent, will point out that one thing and not the 100 things that you have done. It's a peculiar thing in this country, I think. Of course, it may be because we are new to it. Some countries like any other place, it doesn't happen. I don't know how it is in India. In England, I believe they have got sort of an electoral committee and things like that. And everything goes through the committee. Here it is not that. Okay. And generally, our members, in areas where they have established certain committee, something like that, all right. But others, no. Mr. Bandar Naik was a person who had organized constituency like that. He used to attend, sometimes he used to attend personal matters, sometimes a man comes and says that he has he wants some particular matter done, then he might intervene. But he has made himself indispensable for the people. He didn't depend upon the people, but the people had to depend on him. That is how he has created the constitution. He knew democracy thoroughly well, and he knew the area of this British institution, something like that, so that the average informal constituents had to depend on him, and not he depend on him. Whereas the other MPs, they have got into such a position that they have got to depend on certain important people in his constituency.
Say you are an MP, yes, and you find Mr. Pereira coming and presenting a grievance before you and asking you to take it up with the minister.
Yes.
Isn't it a very difficult question in the sense that according to what he says, he has a grievance, but you're not quite certain that he's telling the truth. He might have exaggerated it or concocted something.
Oh, it's quite possible. That happens. Very often that happens. Usual things in this country, especially, I have been practicing also for some time, people don't speak the truth. Even to the lawyer, they don't come and put the truth of their case. Okay? So that when the people come and receive instruction, you have to accept only about 25-30% of what he says.
So aren't you, as an MP, in a difficult position, because
yes,
he wants you to go and meet the minister.
Yes, sir.
But you are not quite certain that what you are conveying is
true. You are not supplied with the full facts. Mm-hmm.
Do you sometimes try to ascertain the fact? Do you ask somebody in that fellow's village,
yes,
whether this is true or not?
Yes. But the village mind is this, you see. He thinks that certain facts will not go in his favor. He suppresses those facts and gives only which he thinks will be of use to him.
So do you try to check on that? Do you know that Mr. Pereira comes from, say, Gampaha, or this village, village X? Do you ask one of your friends in that,
yes,
village,
yes,
what is the real situation here? Is what Pereira is saying correct? Do you try to check on that?
Sometimes you can check on them. If you contact the officers in the country or the GA himself, you can check on them. Now, for instance, a question like this. A man says, I have been in possession of a government land for the last so many... Man says, I have been in possession of a block of government land for the last so many years. I want you to get this one. There's a certain way by which you can get a transfer from the government. See? But when you go to the government agent, you find that this man had been asked to pay a lease of a few rupees every year. He had not paid for the last number of years. He has a suppressed fact. So MP can't do anything in that matter. He has violated he placed himself in a very difficult position. Or he might say that he has been in possession of the land for such a long time.
Mm.
He might not have any permanent cultivation at all. Only some of these ordinary cash crops, you see, temporary cultivation.
But isn't it correct to say that the average MP,
yeah,
doesn't have the means of checking on what he's got?
Difficult. Very difficult. Unless he contact the Kachari. Unless he takes proper pains to inquire from the neighbour, inquire from others, which the MP has the trouble to do. And they set up a very good, strong committee. That committee might do that. But MP himself hasn't got the instrument of inquiring into the matter and then finding out the exact truth.
Mm-hmm. I asked all these questions because some public servants,
yes,
from 1948,
yes,
from UNP days, complain of what they call political interference from MPs, from ministers who have taken up the cause of MPs.
Well, they're not far wrong. I can't say they're wrong. Interference is there. Interference is there. Okay. MPs, some MPs try to interfere far too much. You see. Some people, in fact, some time ago, some doctor was performing an operation on a patient, and the MP for that area had come and tried to wait about, and the surgeon told the doctor, "Here you are, you do the operation, I'm going." He walked off the place. I mean, things come to such a stage, you see. When the MP tried to interfere too much, the government officer, whoever it is, he finds it rather difficult to do the job. Or the government officer himself happens to be a man with short temper, you see. And he doesn't want to be interfered with.
On the other hand, I was wondering whether some government officers were too authoritarian and didn't give the MP a certain amount of legitimate power, didn't allow for the exercise of a certain amount of legitimate power on the part of the MP.
The unfortunate part of it is, in the case of some MPs, if you give a little bit too much, they will widen up, increase that power. And strictly speaking, they have no power. What are the powers MPs have got? They have no power as such, you see. They must not try to think that they are only representative of the people, and to place the matter pertaining to the people of the particular area before the legislature overseas, and that is done. Or they are the
means. They must do that.
Yes, that's the right. Or they are the means of getting grievances redressed. If they stick to that, all right. Okay. But of course, there is one way with the government officers. If they do a thing depending on certain facts, if later really different facts are subject to them, they don't want to interfere. They don't want to change their decisions. There they come to clash.
Mm-hmm. I was wondering whether all this friction and these clashes could have been avoided if there was proper cooperation between the local MP and the AGA, especially in the coordinating committee.
That's quite so. Could be avoided. If there is proper. If you don't interfere too much, now even some of our ministers interfere too much. The government officers. So if I found that I did not interfere, I got on very well. Government officers always. Whenever they come with a problem to me, then I state my views and things like that. I see certain facts which perhaps the man needs to see, and they most immediately accept it. Yes, sir. I take my point, I tell you that. I discuss with them, you see. But I have not met a permanent secretary or the head of a department, you see, who tried to impose his views on me. Mm-hmm.
I was wondering whether, as Minister of Health, you had some difficulty over the Karudaratna case.
This is the difficulty. Difficulty was with Karudaratna and the permanent secretary integrity. They had always fights. So the Karudaratna comes with a problem to me against permanent secretary.
Who is this?
LSP Pereira. Permanent secretary LSP. Now he is our High Commissioner in Canada. You see. I had to send for LSP and find out. I said, LSP, what is all this? Then he gives me something quite different. He says something quite different. There are always friction between the two, the permanent secretary and head of the department. Therefore, I found it difficult. Otherwise, Karunaratna was all right. It's just the point of course, he's a clever man, he's an able man.
There was this charge against him, and then he was due to retire, and he retired, and then again he said, "No, I won't retire. Let this investigation continue. I want to be cleared." Wasn't there some sort of charge against him?
Yes.
And a committee was set up. Inquiry was set up.
Yes.
But he was due to retire before that.
Yes, sir.
And his retirement was accepted.
Yes.
But then he said, "Postpone. Give me another year in the department so that my name is cleared."
That's right.
And then there was some difficulty with Veerasinghe over that,
No? That is also because of the trouble with the permanent secretary. And when the permanent secretary has got this sort of knife into somebody, it's extremely difficult. And Karunaratna also was a very stiff unbending, you see. He doesn't give in. He just doesn't give in. With the result that when he was asked, he was asked to retire, then there was certain things against him. I think some of those things were not connected with his duty, outside his duty. And he did ask for an extension. And my advice was to give him the extension. We always give him the extension because he has got to clear his name. Wherever he goes. And I tried my utmost to bring a sort of a friendly understanding between the two. Very difficult. Very difficult because both were very stiff, very rigid.
This is the part.
What about the Public Service Commission? Did you now that was meant to be an institution which protected public servants from interference and ministerial interference in particular. But people say nowadays that they too were liable to be pressurized.
There also, there was this difficulty. Unfortunate part of this country is that the public members of the public service can be reappointed. You see, with the result, from the time they are appointed, their whole idea is to please the existing government. So, there were occasions, I can't say very much, I think there were occasions where the chairman of the Public Services Commission used to be in and out of the Prime Minister, you see, and he just wanted, and if there is a Prime Minister who likes to get a hold of the public service, he could do so through the Public Service Commission.
Wasn't DS like that?
Who?
DS.
DS, I think up to a point, he was that. Perhaps it might not happen if the members of the Public Service Commission are not eligible to be appointed.
With reference to the civil service, when you took over in 1956,
yes.
Did you feel that the officers were generally UMP oriented?
Oh yes, UMP. There were a number of instances there where I don't see open obstruction, but the delay, something like implementation was delayed, and the ministers got the trouble over the delay, and things like that.
Can you recall any?
Yes. At that time, the government had been under UMP government for about 9 years, you see, so they had got used to that sort of idea. So when we came in, we were considered to be a socialist government, So it took some time, you see, it took some time for the ministers to get used to the permanent officers, or the permanent officers to get used to the ministers. It took some time. But now what they say is that some of the permanent officers are SLSP. Now the charge made against by the people, this government did that. Therefore they are delaying.
Were there any ministries where you found particular difficulty because of this?
Any ministries where...
You found delays in the 56-65 period.
I myself didn't notice it so much in my ministry. That was the Home Ministry, but I think that was a case with some other ministries like agriculture. And agriculture and even finance. Even finance. And but of course, if the minister knows how to get about it, if he has got his wits about it, he needn't worry about that.
I was wondering what the difficulty between...
Even education, in fact, Mr. Dhana said open clash with the director of education at that time, Mr. D.D.S. upon class, yes, in the case of David Paper, and he was removed within a few days' time, and after the time.
What was the difficulty between Mrs. Vimala Vijayavardhana and Gunaratna?
Vimala Vijayavardhana?
Gunaratna.
Mr. Dr. Gunaratna?
No, W.D. Gunaratna.
I believe Mrs. Vijayavardhana is trying to interfere too much. W.D. Gunaratna was a good man. I think he was an honest man, you see. I knew him as the government agent culture. I used to meet him very often. But Mrs. Vijayavardhana, I think, harassed him too much. Mm-hmm. Mrs. Vijayavardhana is a person who always tries to interfere. Mm-hmm.
And she had a lot of influence that time because she was with Buddha Rakita, wasn't she, that group?
Who?
She was with Buddha Rakita.
That's right, Buddha Rakita and various other people who used to in and out of her. Actually, it was, there was a stage. When Buddha Rakita was doing the ministry, you know? Yeah. You could transfer and all kinds of doctors, nurses and all these people, you could go there. And good Buddha Rakita's place. So then he undertook to transfer doctors, transfer particularly, transfer nurses, appoint nurses, and all the sort of things.
I suppose she had a lot of pull within the party because both Buddha Rakita personally and her former husband, Mr. Vijayavardhana, had provided some of the funds, hadn't she? Didn't she also provide a lot of money?
For the therapy?
Yes.
No.
She
didn't. She hadn't supplied the funds for the therapy. They had they supported the general election in other ways, organization and things like that, they did support. But not the funds. Buddha Rakita had no funds. I don't think Vijayavardhana had any funds. The SNF election fund came from other sources. Because with regard to funds to the SNFP, I knew everything. Because I was the
treasurer.
I was the treasurer. I was the treasurer at the time. And no money came in without my knowledge, and no money went out without my knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Both Mr. Mandaranaya and myself had to sign checks to do any money on the party funds.
Oh, I got an impression that this Mr. Vijayavardhana gave a lot of money.
Pardon?
I thought that Mr. Vijayavardhana gave a lot of money.
No. That was an impression in the country. That was Mandaranaya. What caused that impression? Mr. Mandaranaya had a land, you see, some 200 acres, something like that. And this didn't give him any very much of a return. Old coconut. So one day he told me, I want to share this land. And I said, look here, that these are lands given to you by your father, and if you won't sell him these things, what do the people say? That you are selling all your people. Father said, no, but these are not giving you any return at all. So he sold that land and Mrs. Vijayavardhana was the purchaser. But Mrs. Vijayavardhana having the money to give at once. So she gave some portion of the money and most of the same land for the balance. So Mr. Mandaranaya had to wait for some time to get this money.
Mm-hmm.
That's what happened. And that was also not during elections, before the election.
I suppose there were a lot of problems in choosing ministers in 1956.
Oh yes, right.
Did Mr. Bandaranaik ask you what ministry you liked, or did he say, I want to take home affairs?
He asked me what ministry do you like. I said, it's not for me to tell you. This is what ministry I like. It's for the Prime Minister to give you whatever he thinks. Then he asked me what education. I said, no, that's too big a problem for me. I said, that's education and two other topics something. Number of teachers all over the place. I rather not. Then, early on, during the campaign, the CV test coming, he told me, AP, if we come in, would you care to take the Home Ministry? I said, I don't mind. So then, when I received education, he said, will you take Home Ministry? I said, all right.
I thought Dahanayaka and Irigala, both of them wanted education.
Dahanayaka wanted education. The anarchy, this is before the minister, this is a prospective minister, met.
Yes,
it was. He asked me. So Dahanayake wanted education. Dahanayake said, if you meet only education, nothing else. At that stage, Mr. Bandaranayake did not want to rub a single person on the wrong side. He wanted to have only cooperation of every mark. Because our government was not an SLP government, but an MEP. That means we had people like Mr. Philip Gurwaran, Dahanayake, Baba Paramuna, and then the VLSSP, then independent, like Vijay Olda and all these people.
But didn't he rub Mr. Iriyogala up the wrong way? Didn't Mr. Iriyogala get annoyed?
He was. Because he was the Parliament Secretary, Mr. Home Affairs, to me, Parliament Secretary. And then he went and asked Mr. Bandaranayake for a portfolio. So I said, no, you have no vacancies. That time got, and he suggested that because Mr. Bandaranayake did not believe in a large cabinet. He wanted to have a small cabinet, you see. So he actually suggested that we should pick something or other and give him something. And Mr. Bandaranayake was agreeable. So he got angry and resigned.
That was in
1959 or? No, 88 I believe.
But why didn't he raise this issue in 56 itself? Why didn't he ask Mr. Bandaranayake to give him a ministership at that stage?
At the beginning?
Yes.
Well, when the cabinet was formed, only a certain number of people were invited. And Iriyogala was not one of those people who invited. Mm-hmm. Iriyogala was not considered to be sort of a party leader at that time. He was independent. Mm-hmm.
Now I was wondering whether SLSP had suffered from this, because it would seem that in 65, he was very active in working against SLSP, and he organized...
He was very active. Because, that is for one thing, SLP contested him. SLP contested him, beat him in 1960.
So?
So that's one of the reasons why he was very angry. One of the reasons why he was angry, and he was not going to ministry, and he chucked up the parliamentary secretaryship also. He was not there at parliamentary for more than a few months. That was 7 or 8 months. 6 or 7 months. I believe he gave it up in 1956.
What was the quarrel between Somaveera Chandrasiri and Mr. Bandaranayake? Didn't he also leave the group?
No. There was not much of a quarrel. He was a LSSP man at the beginning. LSSP man. And then he found that he found it rather difficult to hold the seat as an LSSP man. That's why he joined the LSP. But he was never out for a ministry.
No, I was not thinking of the ministership, but somewhere in the late 50s, joined up with Rajaratna, and he contested one of the seats against the SLSP too, on the JMV ticket. I was wondering what...
Rajaratna and Somaveera?
Yes.
I believe so, yes. Yes, they formed into sort of a... That's right.
And I was wondering why he contested a seat against an SLSP man in 1960.
Somaveera?
Yes.
He did not contest against SLSP. 1960 he was nominated as an SLSP man for Express Bawa.
In March? March 1960?
March 1960, yes, I believe. Yes, that's right. That's right. There was some difference of opinion, I think, at that time. And I had to intervene in the matter. And get him the nomination.
For July?
Yes, July.
But before that he had...
Before that he was with this chap, this... some of these people, because sometimes even without any reason, they are trying to maneuver for position. Now you see a man like S.P. Bandaranayake. S.T. Bandaranayake, that means you see the interviews recently with the press and speaking at public meetings. He has come out with certain things absolutely false.
Come out with
certain things which are absolutely false. For instance, one thing he said, Mr. Bandaranaike offered him a portfolio. Absolutely false. Naturally. Far from Mr. Bandaranaike offering a portfolio, when he refused him to give him a portfolio, he sent a big deputation from Rampa to see Mr. Bandaranaike and argue out that he should be given a ministry and that to the agriculture ministry. Mr. Bandaranaike refused. And at a certain stage, he wanted to resign from the party. Then, after Mr. Bandaranaike's assassination, in 1960, you see, he formed a party of his own, both of Bandaranaike. That is, he said that he was going to be much nearer to Mr. Bandaranaike than the television, both of Bandaranaike party. That failed. And that is, I believe, 1960, July, March, first election. Yes, he just skipped through. Then came back to the Telugu, 1960 July.
So isn't the party leadership very suspicious about having these sort of people within the party?
Huh?
Aren't you, as leader of the party, aren't you very suspicious of having people...
Oh, yes, I'm very suspicious. I didn't want to come out with anything because Mr. Bandaranaike was away at that time. You see, now I hear the disciplinary committee meeting is going to be summoned to find out what this fellow was to be sent out at once. You see, he is a man who tries to find out, you see, which is the easiest way for him to come to the top. Now he tried this. Then he tried the Bosat Bandaranaike. Now he tried trying to come with the Chinese. It is because the Chinese has probably given him certain, maybe has given him some money or certain encouragement in various forms that he is trying to create trouble here. I am also very friendly with the Chinese embassy, you see, but there is a limit to the friendship.
And what led Ashoka Karnaratna to leave the party?
Ashoka was at the party also because he was their very minister.
That was more recently, wasn't
yes,
it?
Yes, recently. In 1960.
Was he a junior minister then? Was he a parliamentary?
Yes, he was. Parliamentary secretary to the Ministry of Justice, I believe, at the beginning. Yes.
And he asked Mrs. Bandaranaike to make him a minister?
Yes.
Quite openly?
Quite openly. That was very well known, that he was very dissatisfied. Most of these people who got out of the SLP government were satisfied because they were not their minister.
But don't you think that in some ways, Mrs. Bandaranaike, maybe for the right reasons, made some mistakes in not keeping the loyalty of these sort of these groups?
Yes, I think so. You are quite right there. That's right. Probably through, because she did not know how we bound. He did not know the people, you see. He was seen led and misled by certain individuals who tried to get close to her. And I was close to her myself, but I did not try to interfere too much.
No, now for instance, don't you think that unlike Mr. Bandaranaike, in Mrs. Bandaranaike's time, the party lost the support of some minority caste. I was thinking particularly of Ashoka Karnaratna's community.
I believe because Ashoka Karnaratna was not given a portfolio, his people were not very pleased. They were not at all pleased. You know, Mr. Bandaranaike was a thorough Democrat, not only in Parliament, not only in Cabinet, outside. Even all his personal matters, he was very democratic. He made no distinction between caste or anything like that. So that it was apparent, everybody knew it, he saw it. So that all the trusted him. But Mrs. Bandaranaike is not that. They thought she had come from a Ratwatta and all the rest of it, that is difficult to unapproachable and all the rest of it. Now, I remember Mr. Bandaranaike got married, the homecoming day, you see? Homecoming day. I was there, generally looking into various matters. Tithyatna, Atma Karunatma's brother, elder brother. When I came out, I found Tithyatna and his wife occupying a seat at a distance. Both of them had come, occupying a seat somewhere outside the garden. I said, Tithyatna, you come, you've been wrong. No, no, I just came and asked that. I went and told some other matter. Tithyatna had come with his wife. Only came up and got told that Tithyatna, come along. Took him right into the house for a while and made him sit among his own relations. That sort of thing he used to do.
Now, Kidrata is UNP man, was he the UNP MP?
Kidrata?
Yes.
Yes, he was